All right, before we catch a good chat on the Brian Golf Show with Tim Briand from Foresight Sports, we got to talk about Pinned Golf and the new Ace Rangefinder that you can buy right now with a deep discount. I mean, it is out the door, $175 at pinnedgolf.com. And to use the code Brian Golf, we've got a rangefinder that performs just as good as all my friends' expensive rangefinders, you know, the $300, $400 ones. But when it comes down to it, it has all those same features and doesn't break the bank. So we got slope. We've got some vibration tech, pin lock technology. The moment it hits the pin or the target, gives you a little vibration, tells you, hey, this is your target. We got the yardage, whatever it is, to the decimal. And you are off to the races. Grab the club and go. Makes it quick and easy without, again, breaking the bank at $175 right now, pinnedgolf.com. Use the code BrianGolf. And now from Foresight Sports, let's welcome into the show Tim Briand. What on earth does the business development director at Foresight Sports do, and why is he on my podcast right now?
The business development director at Foresight Sports invents the new game of golf. That's in nuts and bolts. Gets to do some fun stuff working with product innovation and strategic partnerships, just do really fun things that help innovate and hopefully drive the game forward. Some cool stuff that I'm sure we'll get into a little bit later. And thanks for having me on, by the way. It's great to spend some time with you.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, we chatted a little bit back and forth. You know, I have a lot of in common when it comes to club fitting and things like that. This, you've got a huge extensive background in the game of golf. So before we get going a little bit too deep in Foresight, because I think you're going to actually teach me a lot that, you know, with me learning as someone's listening to this at, you know, why GC Quad and Foresight Sports can benefit everyone's game, you know, whether it's for personal use, professional use, they go into an establishment and they have a GC Quad like I do, whatever it may be. So talk to us as much as you can about kind of the setup of your career and how you got to where you're at today.
Oh, wow.
Without going so deep that you're like bored talking about it, you know?
Yeah, we'll do this. We'll spend about 60 seconds on this because I'm uncomfortable with it to begin with, but yeah, this is all I've done. I played collegiately, played in junior golf. You know, I've been doing this for 35 years now. Going back to when I was a kid, I've done everything but mow the greens in this industry, I'd like to think, whether it's GM of a private country club to instructor to part of R&D teams, leading fitting companies, leading fitting operations. So now I get a chance to be part of a golf tech company, which is really, really cool. So that's the nuts and bolts. Prior to Foresight, I was with TruSpec, as you know, and prior to TruSpec, I was with TaylorMade. And so it's been a long journey, and it's been a lot of fun. And just trying to figure out how to help people play a little bit better, because I wish I had more people help me along the way, because I obviously wasn't good enough.
Well, that's what I'm learning by having. I kind of posted it yesterday, too. I said one of the clutch moments in buying or opening our own shop here is the fact that I get a GC Quad and what it does for my own personal use. And I low key, that's the real reason I wanted to start this business. You know, don't tell my wife, you know, who doesn't listen to this show, even when she's on it, she doesn't listen to it. So I'm safe there, but yeah, it's definitely a big reason as to why I did it. Cause I wanted to get better at golf and using the technology that we have nowadays, not just for fitting, but just instruction and, I mean, recreation, getting reps in. You know, you can, yesterday was terrible weather here in North Florida, but yet I was able to grind in here for a couple hours when it was pouring down rain, you know, and storming out, so it was terrible. But where is Foresight Sports at now with everything that, you know, with GC Quad, the recreational game, indoor golf, where is it at now versus a couple years ago even?
Yeah, really interesting question. You know, the state of technology in the industry, I would say that technology is very slow to be adopted. At least that's been, you know, the case up to this point. You know, you look at other industries like baseball, even adopted technology even later than golf did. And I would argue that they've probably actually maybe surpassed golf already in just a very short amount of time with some of the things that they're doing. So It's been an industry that's been slow to adopt some of these innovations. But I think that we're seeing an acceleration in that, you know, emergence of launch monitors in general. when you're looking at optical capture systems. You know, optical capture systems have been in play for actually a really long time in the industry, but at the R&D level. And some groups came along and said, you know, we can do this at the consumer level and actually really do well with this because this data can drive understanding, which helps improvement. And so that's, you know, you look at technology evolution, and now we're seeing all these other technology platforms come, you know, when you're talking about, you know, force and pressure and just doing some messing around with some smart insoles the other day, which were super cool. It's like force plates in your shoes, right? And then you've got like the full-on force plates. They're not really force plates. They're just little pressure sensors. But, you know, we look at launch monitors and we look at these on-course data, you know, collection systems. Arcos, I know, is a group that you've had a lot of experience with. And yep. You look at all these different things, and what we're in the process of doing now is collecting all this data, right? So that's where the industry's at now, is collecting all this data. I don't think we even really understand it all yet. You know, you've got technology and golf carts that are tracking golf cart wear patterns and all this crazy stuff. So we're just collecting all this data now. I don't think we're understanding it all. And that's where I think the pivot's going to be here soon, is that there are going to be different ways to bring all this data together to understand it better through different technologies like AI and machine learning. And then from there, it'll help drive understanding and innovation going forward. You know, club fitting, right? If I were to poll the top 10 club fitters in the industry, what are the 5 golden rules of club fitting? Would there be a unanimous consensus?
Oh, probably not. No, probably not, right?
Right. Now, that doesn't mean that each person's philosophy isn't legitimate or validated. But when you're talking about these universal understandings, you know, you've had this happen in fitting, right? White shaft is supposed to go higher and spin more and go more wild. And then you get it in the hands of that one unicorn that it does exactly the opposite, right? Why? Well, if you ask 10 fitters that question, you probably get 5 or 6, maybe even 10 different answers. So when characterizing and defining the outliers and understanding why that person is an outlier, I think there's a lot of gray area there. And that's where some of these technologies that are collecting data, now we've got to put the data into systems that will help us understand it. That's where the technology is ultimately heading. And then the delivery of that is going to be consumer experiences. You know, you're already starting to see that through on-course experiences being changed. You know, Topgolf was able to layer the regular golfing experience with this augmented reality almost, you know, in the real environment. Now you're going to see real AR being introduced in some forms and fashions. I don't know if you're familiar with PuttView, but that's another really cool system and technology.
I'm really intrigued by PuttView and bringing it in. And I know they've got like a kind of a smaller version of it too, and I want to see it in action.
Yeah. So there are all these layers of technologies that are coming out right now. And as we start to understand all this data we're collecting, we're going to be able to start understanding the golf swing better, understanding shaft technology better. And that's going to help drive innovation, and then it's going to also end up helping drive experiences that make the game more fun to play. You know, when we're looking at simulator growth, that was where we started this conversation. The golf industry has proliferated at a rate that we've never seen it. You know, nobody's ever seen growth like this. It surpasses what we saw in the Tiger boom coming out of the pandemic. It's been astounding, and there's really one interesting takeaway from all the statistics coming out of that, Brian. And the largest sector of growth is in 20 to 40-year-olds. And so these are the more technically savvy. These are the folks that are plugged in on IG. These are the folks that understand how to use apps and how to leverage technology for efficiency and understanding. And so that's going to change this slow adoption of tech in golf. It's going to accelerate much faster, not just on the developmental side, but also on the adoption side, because it's getting younger. It's getting much younger. So it's really exciting to be in the industry. And if, you know, I know you're more technically savvy than most. For those of you out there that may not be as technically savvy as others, I would encourage you to start, you know, getting out there. And number one, it'll make your experience more fun, but it'll also help you play better.
And that's one of the things that I think the gateway drug for me with tech was Arcos, because it's very simple, right? And then it just is collecting data that you, it's statistics that you've been looking at and talking about for years as a golfer, greens in regulation, you know, where are my misses, things like that. And it's just putting it in a more tech way. And from what I'm seeing, no one is hesitating using Arcos anymore. Whereas 3-4 years ago, it was like, man, I got to do this and I got to do that. And obviously there's other companies that do similar stuff like that. And then for me, I relate to using a launch monitor to I work on my own game, right? As soon as I start seeing numbers, I know how to make adjustments. Whereas if I was just on the range and somebody said, you need to go more inside or you need to be a couple degrees more to the left, whatever it may be, I wouldn't be able to correlate that as well as just looking at the screen, seeing the numbers and going, oh, that ball did this. I can make the ball do the opposite real quick. And I know why.
That's right. Well, so here's the question then. I know you've been a quad user or operator for a little while now, and I'm very curious. I remember when you first started working with it, you know, you had kind of an epiphany, and you're like, wait a minute, there are some things that clicked. I'd be very curious to ask some things related to that. But have you ever brought your quad out on the golf course with you?
Absolutely.
Like,
absolutely.
How useful is all that information?
You mean like when you're actually playing and you drop it down on a shot and get the data at the same time as you're playing?
Right.
Well, what's really funny to me is I feel like my numbers are always a little more impressive on the other side when I'm outside. You know, more swing speed, more ball speed, whatever it may be. It's kind of like my for me, I looked at my warm-up and I brought it to a tournament. I was that guy the night before when I was hitting balls, and I said, how long does it take me to warm up, right? And we didn't get to do it as much as I wanted to, but I mean, I immediately, within a few balls of driver after 15 swings, was 174, 175 ball speed outside, which tells me indoors there's a little bit of a, I don't know, a governor on my body, on me, maybe, versus outdoors, right? So that was one of the things that I've used that for, is kind of realizing that I'm up to speed or I'm at game speed a little quicker. But then also noticing how iron shots, they're the exact same for me though. Like my distances are my distances. That's been the biggest thing. Whether I take the quad outdoors or indoors, hit it indoors or outdoors, no matter what, my 7-iron goes like 182. It's 182 club.
And that ties into what you've seen on Arcos, I'm sure, on the on-course data. So it all marries up.
It's ridiculous, actually. It's stupid how accurate it is. I've been adjusting my clubs. I got a new set of irons. It's the first time I've had new irons in like three, like legit put new irons in the bag the first time in 3 years. And the very different type of iron. Went from a Muscleback to an Apex Pro from Callaway. So as you know, it's a little bit of a player's club, but there's that hollow body. You know, there's a little bit of a different feel to it. There's some tech in there. And launches higher, much higher apex, all of this stuff. And I wanted to gravitate towards that, but it's taken me a minute to get used to those numbers in general outdoors. But also, you know, I've had to adjust lie angle and to do all these different things to get the ball to fly properly. And I had to like rely heavily on quad to do that indoor and outdoor. You know, the two kind of had to correlate in order for it to make any sense for me. And it's just started clicking in the last couple of days, and this is a few weeks in, but if it wasn't for quad, that would have taken even longer.
Right. That's exactly right. And you know, you see this a lot with some of the tour players that have changed from using Doppler to optical, specifically our product. A lot with the quad is it gives you the ability to perform the same indoor and outdoor. It captures accurately in the putting environment, so it's through the bag. And when you're looking at the accuracy, you're not going to have a situation in the indoor environment where you make a swing that feels like a fade and it draws, or vice versa. That's kind of the thing. I think as a lot of tour players have installed simulators in the last, 4 or 5 years because of the efficiency, right? If they're working on something like mechanically, they can do that work in a simulator at their house, you know, where they don't have to be out on a golf course to work on some of their movement pattern stuff. So if they're in that environment and they make a golf swing that they know, I mean, they know their golf swings better than anybody. They know that that's a 5-yard fade and they see something that's contrary to that, there's an immediate, wait a minute, you know. And that's where we really excel, is that because we're capturing the launch conditions so perfectly, so precisely, is that we're not depending upon other data points to make calculations.
Well,
and that's a huge thing, right?
And that was the biggest thing with going to Quad for our business. There was not even a 1% of going anywhere other than Foresight Sports. So, you know, with that being said, the guy that plays all the time and is like a 10 handicap or a 15 handicap, but never has seen a ball draw in his life, and all of a sudden he comes into a fitting and he's drawing it. That's going to be very hard to make that player understand that it's this is the club for you, man. You know, like you
got the buy-in is so crucial in the performance setting. If you're just in there playing simulator golf, you know, you're in there to have fun, right? But if you're trying to improve, you're trying to either fit clubs, you're trying to take lessons, give lessons, or you're just in there trying to work on patterns to improve, obviously you want high fidelity to the real environment, and it's so important.
I've almost pulled my hair out through practice sessions when I know, you know, I'm sitting here trying to do something, whatever it is. Like I went through a phase where, you know, I always kind of had a flippy draw swing. And then I got my path a little more inside, a little more left, and I was able to start hitting fades. And then all of a sudden, I'd go into the hitting bay, and I'd be hitting these big pull draws. And I'm just like, no. Like, because when I go out on the golf course, my ball hardly goes left. Now, today it went a little more left because I changed the lie angle, so it didn't go left. It went straight. You know, my ball is flying straighter. And so, but like, I know that correlates because I saw it on GC Quad. I don't know if any other launch monitor I've used, I would be able to, have that direct feedback and the honest feedback that I was getting from that session or most recent session, and then go out on the golf course and see that. But since I did, it was very much like, all right, well, I believe that this is what's going to happen. So I'm able to warm up here. You know, at my course, the range is closed for the whole summer for renovations. They're redoing it all. So I warm up here before I go play a round of golf. I'll hit balls, go hop in the car 15 minutes, 20 minutes down the road, go to the first tee, and I feel like I'm warm. If that wasn't telling me what I was actually doing, I'd go to the golf course, I'd be screwed. You know, I'd be aiming down the right, thinking my ball's going to go left. I'd be aiming down the left, thinking my ball's going to right.
Or you'd be, you know, pulling the wrong club, and, you know, either short or your distance control would be garbage
all day.
You don't get the driving range time. You're putting in all your time in your sim, and then taking that sim experience and bringing that out to the golf course to play on.
Right. Well, so on that subject, with that being said, you know, you do have a lot of players that are doing both. They've got a radar and they've got a quad, right?
Yep.
What is, one, the purpose of that? And two, is it just because they already have one and they're phasing out? Or is it, three, because these guys are playing for so much money, they got so much money, they can have it all and get all the data and, you know, have all the answers, I guess, if you will. What are they comparing?
Sometimes the radar is not on. So that's one thing that I think you need to consider.
Okay. I got you.
So sometimes that radar unit, you know, if you were to look at the green light on the back, that'd be dark. So that's one thing to consider. For the folks that are using both together, they're using the TrackMan unit, the Doppler unit, in an unnormalized setting to track the ball flight with all of the environmental functions. Right.
So, yep.
With a Doppler unit, you have a couple of different settings you can turn your unit into. You can turn it into your indoor setting or your normalized setting. The reason you would do normalized is if you're not hitting a good golf ball, right? So, if you use a Pro V on the golf course and you're hitting a crappy range ball, how is the data relevant? Normalized is a function that Doppler systems use to help make the data relevant. And what they're doing when they do that is they're applying an algorithm that's uses the differentials between performance to extrapolate data. So that's one thing I think that's important to understand at the beginning of this whole conversation. So they use it in the unnormalized setting so that they can see, based upon different altitude and different wind conditions, the difference between what the quad is telling them, which they are using the elevation settings of the barometer to know the actual settings of how far they're hitting it.
Yep.
And they're comparing that to the environmentally affected distances. They're using that to try to figure out the deltas based on the environment. It's a way for them to basically say, okay, I calibrate my swing to 80 yards on this wedge shot, and I'm going to tie that to the quad data and be able to tell the difference. And then when I get to the tournament side, I'm going to make sure it's hitting that 80-yard number, and then what's the unnormalized Doppler telling me as far as the environmental effect.
Okay.
That's how they use the difference. And, you know, there are some things, there are some players that use certain parameters with one system and other parameters with others. Pretty much, if a player is using a unit and wants to understand club data, they're using an optical unit, and that's just pretty much universal. If the only thing that's important to them is the ball data, and they specifically don't care about using it in an unnormalized environment, then maybe the Doppler has some use to them. But like I said, not all the time is the green light on.
I didn't even notice that. I never would have thought to look at it, though. Regardless, I could be on the range watching, and I never would even think to look on the back of the radar.
Yeah. So
the tricks of the trade.
Yeah, the really cool thing is seeing so many folks use our product out on the golf course, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, a huge opportunity. So just getting off of the foresight, you know, for the foresight sports part of this for a moment, and into the game and the industry, right? Where's the industry going? I'll be curious to hear where you think. Where's club fitting going to be in 5 years, 10 years? Where's instruction going to be in 5 years, 10 years? You're an industry operator, been around the game. You're as passionate about this as anybody. Where do you think it's going?
Well, I mean, obviously, it's leaning towards more and more tech. So, you know, the more tech we can get, the more data we can get. You're talking earlier, it's not fair because you kind of teed me up when you're talking about the data collection that we're getting now. And it's like the housing market here in Florida. It's going to bust sooner or later, right? It's got to go back. Like, everybody's got to go, all right, this is what it is, and it's going to be like this for a while. Hopefully, we're taking all this data, and to your point earlier of saying, we're going to take it and make everybody be able to enjoy the game a little bit more with a little more ease, you know, whatever it may be. You know, I go back to indoor golf. I can come in here because I'm so used to it, and I could play 36 holes at Carnoustie and St. Andrews and have almost as good of a time as if I was outside playing. But you put me at night or when it's raining, and are you kidding me? Like, I'm going to choose that over not playing golf or not doing any kind of golf activity, make zero progress in my game, whatever it may be, all day. Because that, I mean, that's truly, I love that part. I don't take my quad out on the course as much as I should because I don't want to flex. I don't want to be the guy with the $20,000 launch monitor, you know, on a Tuesday night or whatever, like hitting balls on the range. But it does matter to me. Like, and it should, it's kind of like none of your business, you know, and it's probably also a really good conversation starter too. And it always has been anytime I've seen it.
So what if that quad was a little smaller and a lot cheaper and a lot more discreet? Would you do it then?
Well, that's what I'm waiting on. That's what I'm waiting on. This is what we were going to eventually get to talking about, whether you knew we were going to talk about it or not. But more and more people are asking me about personal launch monitors. And I'm very straightforward with people in my DMs. I don't just give people the answer they want to hear all the time. I don't just give people the easy answer. It may seem easy, but a lot of times I just say, look, from my experience, if it isn't this or this, then it's crap. And that's because my standard is extremely high. And that is, I know you're not going to be able to probably afford a $20,000 GC quad and take it out on the golf course and, you know, do all that thing with it. Maybe you don't need it for those reasons and it's not practical for you, but I have one. So for me, I don't think about the personal launch monitors, and I never, before I even had a quad, was even looking at getting a personal launch monitor. Not a single one of them out there do I care about. Now, I will say, because of Super Speed, having Super Speed Golf, I do obviously love that they have the radar that they sell, and you can get swing data, swing speed data with the sticks without hitting a golf ball. Like, that's obviously really key, but that is a personal launch monitor, but it's not one that I use, you know, for true ball data. It's more just for when I'm using the training sticks to get that speed data. But I'm waiting for one really cool little box, you know, hopefully with I don't know, some GC2 technology in it at least. I mean, give me two cameras. I don't care. Give me one camera as long as it tells me some of the parameters that I'm looking for when playing outside, and it can be discreet and very personal. Then I'm in.
Yeah.
Not that quad's big and ugly. It's just it's
you make
it's
a
flex.
Right?
It's a flex.
Yeah, you make a great point in that. You know, having something that is very user-friendly, something that's very intuitive, something that is reliable and capable and durable, right? And so when you look at the personal launch monitors that have been developed, I think they're great ideas. How do you make all of this data more available to more people? And obviously you do that by lowering the price. There's an inherent issue. When you're talking about the science behind a GC quad, it literally is rocket science. It's not cheap to develop this stuff. And something that a lot of folks don't know about Foresight, we're 100% vertically integrated. So all of our parts are made under our roof. And we're 100% made in San Diego, so 100% made in the USA. And so there's a lot of time and effort that goes into putting these things together and the level of precision. And we've had to take patents just for testing equipment, right? So when we test and calibrate our products, we're doing it with technology that's patented, just to test it and calibrate it. So this is, it's a big process to be able to have that level of precision, and to do that, all that, under one roof in the United States. Now, when you look at other personal launch monitor companies, they suffer from a few issues. One is precision and accuracy, right? So is the data you're getting relative to the golf course? And with some companies, they don't. And then the next big thing would be, is it reliable? And what I mean by that is, if you're playing a simulated round of golf and you just absolutely smash one and you look at it up on the simulator and it failed to capture, that's not a very good experience.
It's terrible.
Right?
Like, they always miss the good ones too. They only miss the good ones.
That's right. And in a fitting environment, that can actually cost money.
Yep.
In a fitting environment, that reliability factor, as can cost money. Because if that one shot that person hits, they absolutely smoke one, and you don't capture the data and it doesn't capture the shot, that may skew data in one way or the other that may be a sale or not a sale. So, at the end of the day, the reliability component is super important. And then the versatility part, being able to use it indoors or outdoors. Some of the systems that exist in the personal launch monitor game, if they're Doppler, they don't do as well indoors because Doppler has inherent challenges indoors. And if they're optical, they don't do well outdoors because they're not mobile, et cetera, et cetera. So we feel there's a strong market opportunity. I can't really say anything more than that. But we're very excited about where the future of golf is heading. You look at what has occurred in Asian markets, specifically Korea and Japan, and even now China. As you probably know, I've spent a lot of time over in Korea over the last few years prior to the pandemic, and Golf Zone has kind of taken the country by storm, and it's simulator golf. They have these huge facilities. They have these huge facilities that have these communal hitting bays where everybody's hitting into like a big screen. And then they have these little private rooms. It's kind of like Top Golf compared, it's like indoor driving range / Top Golf / and this is how people actually get introduced to golf. And by the way, there are like 7,000 of these in the country of South Korea. It's so wild. If you ever get over there, you'll see more golf zones than Starbucks. And there are more Starbucks. Here's the thing. There are more Starbucks per capita in South Korea than anywhere in the world. So there are a lot of Starbucks, more than there are here, and you'll see even more golf zones.
No way.
So it's pretty wild. Oh, it's wild.
Well, and I love indoor golf. Like I said, I love indoor golf. And as much as, we've got your standard 1,400 square foot, whatever it is, 80 by 22, retail space, right? Whatever's basically go to any shopping center, that's what we have. And we have this fantastic dude next door. He's a jeweler. Maple Street over here, they're not going anywhere. I don't know if you ever had Maple Street. They're not going anywhere, but they've got two units. This guy over here, he's working Tuesday through Saturday. He's big in hunting, owns property up at Big Cedar Lodge. He's a big golfer. Like, he's eventually going to retire, right?
Right.
And what I really like to do is get it to where we can get a couple more bays over there, more for bay rental, so people can really, because they can rent this bay And right. I don't mind that at all, because I don't look at it as, man, I'm going to miss out on an opportunity to fit someone and sell a set of golf clubs. I look at it more as, oh man, the bay's being used. I can go build, right? I can go do some other things. I can run the business and do kind of two things at once, at least, without the bay just sitting there. But eventually I want it to be known that, like, people can come here and play golf, like, whatever it may be. And eventually we'll probably, hopefully, you know, I don't want him to retire because I don't like him. I want him to retire because I want to be, I want the space next door. So hoping that can happen for the reason you're talking about, is that's part of where I think golf is going.
Yeah. So you look at, you know, this widespread adoption of technology in Korea and Japan, and how they use simulator golf as a segue to get out on the golf course. You know, golf courses are extremely expensive there.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if you're going to get out on the golf course, you better be decent so that you can enjoy it. And if you're not decent, you're better off just hitting into a screen. So that's how a lot of folks learn. There's been a resistance to that model over here for a long time. I think what the pandemic has done is it's reshaped people's minds on that whole idea, you know. And what we're seeing is that even with this boom in the golf industry, there's an even bigger boom within the simulator markets. You know, us and all of our competitors that are in simulators, we can't keep up. The whole industry can't keep up with supply chain, but, you know, everybody is, it's wild. So where do I see this going? I think as the cost of technology continues to come down with product innovation, and when we can start to deploy solutions for customers, you know, that can make it more affordable and start to link together these virtual experiences through people, you know, through communities that are virtually, I think what you're going to see is a lot of growth. And there's a big reason why I think this is important. The game has exploded in the last 18 months, you know, after the pandemic. It's one of the silver linings of that whole nasty experience, right? But are we going to be able to keep all these people in the industry? Are they going to continue to want to play golf? And so the idea is, well, what would be things that we would see attrition from? And you can look back to the whole Tiger situation for the answers. And it's time and money is the two big drivers. And so when you look at the money aspect, a lot of folks have said, yeah, well, we've seen a lot of growth in golf because discretionary income has gone up because you can't travel internationally, go to concerts, do all these things. Well, guess what? A lot of folks are getting back to that, but they're still spending their money on golf. So what we're starting to see is that the growth of golf really correlates more to the workforce model. And what I mean by that is people are working from home, so they have more time to play golf and they can structure their schedules around it. So as people start to return to the office, what are we going to do as an industry to keep people playing? I think Foresight is positioned to answer that question. And that is bring experiences to people at a more affordable option at the same level of experience that they get in fidelity to the golf course, and be able to keep these people engaged with golf between Monday to Friday. And that's the big thing here. How do we keep people engaged with golf and wanting to do it Monday to Friday?
Well, and so with the pandemic, and obviously everyone, you know, is getting toys. Everybody's been buying toys as much as they can. The people that can afford it have been buying toys, I should say. And, you know, you got my wife all of a sudden wants a jet ski. Like, what are we're going to get a jet ski, apparently. And, you know, it's like tax-free for the next couple weeks or something like that. Our governor said, hey, anybody that gets any outdoor activity is going to get outside this year. You know, DeSantis is like, we're going to do it tax-free. People buying simulators. For me, it was very key when we started our business, whether it was practical or not, it's actually fantastic, is getting a sim in the box from Foresight Sports. That way we can also show someone, because I had it so many times in the past when fitting where they go, this is amazing. How much would this cost? And a certain percentage of those people are ready to actually buy something just like that for their house. I have players that come in here all the time. They have another, you know, they've got a radar system, and they come in here and go, this is much more practical for space and our room. Like, we should have done this. I didn't even know this existed, right? So with that, where is the sim in the box fitting into the business development? And you're talking about maybe getting, you know, because it's expensive. But from my understanding, it's actually somewhat more affordable than some of these less accurate simulator systems that are out there.
Yeah, I think when you're looking at the whole sim in a box idea, once again, it's how do we put everything in one package together, bundle it together. One, you can erect it yourself at your house. You don't need, you know, to hire a contractor to come in. You don't have to get permits and all these crazy things. How do we put something together for somebody to put something up in their house very easily, whether it be a garage or wherever? And, you know, there are some other solutions out there that you can kind of do yourself, but making sure that it all works together and functions together properly as far as the screen, that's a big thing, right? If you found that out, not all screens are created equal.
No, they're not. I blew through mine in like less than 6 months. I blew through it.
Yeah, so not all screens are created equal. And sometimes, you know, folks that are building their own solution, sometimes, you know, you don't know what you don't know when you're building a sim for the first time.
Yep.
And so this is a solution that helps people put that together. That's a very easy solution. It all shows up on your door. You put it up and you're hitting balls that afternoon. So,
well, that was what I wanted. I wanted, you know what? I wanted to, one, know exactly how much it's going to cost, right? As we're starting up, putting all our money into a business, I mean, draining our savings and buying a GC quad and a sim in the box and all this stuff, things I never, you know, dreamed of owning personally. And you're sitting there going, I want to know exactly how much it's going to cost. I want to know that I can put it together, you know, because I don't want it to cost even more. You know, so we did kind of our own little thing to kind of frame it in here, and then ended up piecing together pieces from the other box, I think the right. Albatross box that has the GC right. Hawk, and we brought the cage right. in from that over into whatever the Eagle box or something like that, right? So I don't know the names of them, but all I know is it was super easy. I'm surprised people aren't getting, well, people I know, I'm surprised people I know aren't getting more and more of them, because I know some people that have the money and have the space. What's the big driver right now? You know, are you getting a lot of pandemic people working from home, want something to do at home, can't go golf, whatever it may be? Are you selling them to a lot of businesses, or what do you like? How is that working, and how's that pushing the game of golf forward?
It's really every sector. It's the home user. It's the businesses. It's enterprise operators. It's everything. I mean, right now, everything is clicking on full cylinders, which is so much fun, and obviously makes the schedule a little hectic. But as far as, you know, where we're seeing the most growth, I think that we're starting to see the most growth with sim installs at golf courses, actually.
Yeah.
That's largely something that, you know, a lot of golf course operators have kind of said, well, why would I put a sim in? I have the real thing outside. And I think a lot of them are starting to be like, wait a minute, I can actually run leagues and I can do all these cool things. And especially if I'm in a snowbelt facility, now I can do that, you know, virtually and actually generate revenue from it. And
right.
it helps the overall experience. It's another amenity to keep people inside the walls of that private course. So I think we've seen a lot of growth there just because there wasn't a lot of movement in the past. But in all sectors of simulators and technology, it's been great, man. And it's, you know, I think one thing needs to be said, right? Not everybody's a tech junkie. Not everybody wants to engage in this way. One of the beauties of golf is you're out in nature and you're enjoying the fresh air and, you know, fellowship with your friends. You know, that's why all of the innovative companies that are pursuing these ventures, one of the things that's very important to all of us is to do it non-intrusively and very self-intuitively, so that users can use these technologies without having a PhD, and that they can gain understanding yep. from it, you know, without having a PhD either. So that it's intuitive and then also not invasive, right? As you mentioned earlier, bringing a quad, toting it around in your, you know, Monday afternoon game or Friday afternoon game, you know, there would probably be, you'd probably see some eye rolls and some groans from that, right? So how do we continue to develop and innovate to make it so that we remove that impediment? You know, that's what I would say. And that's where the game's going. Whether you're a tech adopter or user or not, the idea is to be capturing data from everybody And the folks that want to use it can. The folks that want to continue to play golf and not improve and maximize their potential, that's fine. They can do that too.
So how much time are you spending with these people telling, like, are you spending a lot of time as a company training people, everyday users, how to use the quad properly? Because I use it every day, and I feel like there's some tricks out there that you could tell me to enhance my experience as a fitter and as a player using it for personal use.
I think the biggest thing that I would express to anybody that uses our products, one huge differentiator is that onboard LCD display where you don't have to hook it up to a computer. It has an onboard computer. We're the only technology piece that has a computer that's basically in the unit, and it drives all that LCD information. And understanding the settings and the way to set up the actual unit, I'm not talking about when you connect it to the software, but setting up the hardware, specifically the barometer, and understanding how to use the barometer and, you know, what impact that has over the data that you're getting. I think that's very, very important. You know, as far as, you know, the biggest thing with any of these systems is garbage in and garbage out. So if you don't calibrate the unit to your target line, if you are using fiducials to get face tracking, and you're not putting them on there correctly, you know, you got to take the time to do some of these things right. Yes, you know, fiducialing a face. I just made that a verb.
Fiducialing a face. Yeah, it's something that needs to be said. He's talking about the, so let's just say what it is. The stickers that go on the club face to get the data.
Yeah, so stickering the face. So, yeah, is that a pain in the butt? Yeah. But it's required if the level of precision that you want to get capture, the whole reason you have the unit, you know, take the time to do it right, because otherwise the data you may be getting isn't accurate and therefore all that relevant in helping you for improvement.
All right. So setting up and calibrating the target line, give me the easiest way to do that properly indoors when it's sitting in the same spot every day. You still have to seem to calibrate it, because you'll hit that shot that all of a sudden it goes like 8 degrees left and you're like, wait a second. So explain the process of that and how that works, because that's something I believe I could probably do better.
Yeah. So calibrating, I always, number one, you know, I always make sure it depends on where the strike area, if you're varying your strike area on for anybody that's indoors, right?
Yep.
If everybody's hitting from the same location, then you can kind of map out where the quad needs to go and get it pretty darn close. And that makes sure that the ball is coming out of the center of the viewfinder. And then, you know, once you make sure that the strike area is centered in the viewfinder of the machine, then you use your little calibration stick to make sure that it's aiming directly at your target. Now, you don't need to actually move the unit, so it's calibrating to wherever that hole is. I always tell people best practice, make sure that the strike area is in the center, or that the strike is occurring in the center of the viewfinder, and do your best to get to 0-0. You know, I think that squaring the unit up as perfectly as you can, using the fiducial placement as perfectly as you can get it. I'm a stickler for detail. That's probably coming from my R&D background.
Right.
You know, can you use the quad and will it read accurately if you don't have the unit perfectly square to the calibration pole? As long as the calibration unit, you know, stick, the calibration rod is aligned perfectly, it should work just fine.
Yeah. And no, like when I take it outside on the range and I'm just hitting balls, sometimes I'll just drop it down because I just want to see, for the most part, like, I don't need to see the quad tell me the direction. It's right there in front of me. I just look down and go, all right, is it reading spin and side spin properly? And is it reading my ball speed and all that properly? The distance, is that proper? And most of the time, that answer is yes, without going too in-depth and grinding over, like, getting it dead straight. Plus, obviously, outdoors, you know, you've taken divots and all of that. That's frustration, but at least you got a good little area that you can use on the quad versus some of the other ones where it's like, oh, made three swings, got to move the radar.
Did you? Yeah, I know. And that is one of the nice things, is that the viewfinder area is one of the larger viewfinder areas of any tech. So you've got a large striking area to hit shots from. It actually brings up, I don't remember which event it was. It was this year. I want to say it may have been Riviera. I think it was Riviera, but it was around that time of the schedule. Do you remember seeing Bryson up there? It was one of his 7:30 grind sessions under the spotlight.
Yeah, absolutely.
And do you remember he had out a Phantom camera, that super high-speed camera? Do you remember that?
Yep.
they were actually validating the quad. They were doing that and a few other things. They were basically doing their own R&D on tech.
When you say they, you're talking about Bryson and his team.
Yeah, they were doing their own little R&D session to validate technology. And I'm happy to say that, you know, the findings and the information shared from that was made us very happy. So,
do you feel like, and you can say this however you want, you can answer it, obviously you're going to answer it however you want, and I don't want to offend or anything, but do you feel like Quad doesn't get enough credit because we just call them all TrackMan, you know?
Yeah.
Like Dustin Johnson. Oh, he grinded on his wedges and now he's a good wedge player because of TrackMan. When it's like Phil Mickelson, and I don't know if we're allowed to name all these players, but everyone's got a quad.
Yeah, it's definitely frustrating when, you know, when your competitor has, you know, moved into a kind of this ubiquitous category in the space, and yet, you know, under the radar, at least to the consumer, let's face it, those in the industry, teachers, fitters, OEMs, manufacturers, you know, everybody that's in the industry, they understand the differences and the benefits. And that the consumer mindset is something that will take hold as we continue to, you know, as we continue to have wins out on tour, and as we continue to have wins, by wins out on tour, I mean just folks using our equipment.
Right.
As we continue to build our relationships with teachers and fitters, and all the validation that's gained through all those relationships, you know, we know that, you know, optical is the best solution when you're trying to get high level data as far as, you know, fast motion objects.
Yeah. And to clarify, when you're saying optical, this is just breaking it down, optical versus radar or Doppler, correct?
Yeah, that's right. It's
cameras versus radar.
Cameras versus radar. That's right. There are some applications that radar is great for, but some of the precision that's required to characterize the impact interval and what's happening with the club and the ball at impact is unbelievably complicated. A lot of folks don't understand how complicated that is. And furthermore, then applying the different models that are needed to be able to measure and a ball flight, all the different ball flight models, that's unbelievably complicated too. So like I said earlier, it's literally rocket science. And this stuff, you know, it's going to drive the industry forward. How do we do it in a way that, you know, that somebody that is not a technician can understand and gain learning from? And that's where I think all of our technology companies have to do a lot better, is making this less invasive, more intuitive, and allowing more people to understand the value. That's going to be a big difference as we start to move forward.
Well, I can be as big of a champion for Foresight as possible, you know, because it is definitely extremely valuable, but not just as a professional in this industry, but as someone who uses it personally. It's the most remarkable thing, and it's the best thing that's ever happened to my golf game. You know, in the last 6 months, ball striking wise, I've become a really good ball striker because I've just been able to understand my golf swing. And, you know, I feel like I've been able to, for the first time, you know, I've fit myself into this agnostic bag where I've got five different brands in my bag all of a sudden. And that's something I haven't had in years. And I don't know if I could really trust what's in my bag if I was fitting myself based on anything else. One, I'd probably not fit myself. I'd go somewhere else and say, all right, somebody put me in the right setup, because I'm not going to sit here and grind on this if I didn't have the ease and the technology and understanding of Quad.
Yep. Yeah, we can't wait to see what the future holds, and we're just happy to be a part of the conversation and be able to be in a position to drive some thought forward, you know, whether it's AI and AI's application to the game, you know, whether it's data aggregation on course, characterization and training. You know, there's so many cool things happening right now. And for all of you golfers out there, you're going to start to see some really cool things coming. You know, have you seen all the different putting, the, you know, pop stroke and stuff like that? They're layering in different technologies into these experiences as well. So
I'm
very
ready.
Exciting time to be in the industry, and very honored to be working with a group that's kind of helping drive it forward.
Absolutely. And that's exactly what you guys are at this point. Plus you're doing it all trendy out there in San Diego. I've seen you guys with True Temper and Project X. You got the bar down there and all this shit. You guys are, you know, I mean, that's what you really did. Y'all teamed up with a brewery, you got a quad in there, Foresight, have these beer leagues. It's quite amazing. I want to see that kind of make its way into Florida. Maybe that's what I do next door. I make up a little bar and it's a little beer league.
Right.
Dog Lake Brewing Company. We'll bring them to North Florida. So look, Tim Breon from Foresight Sports, I can't thank you enough for hopping on. I mean, I feel like there's a million things we could talk about, not about Foresight and just about golf and golf clubs, and probably have some amazing conversations. So maybe we'll do that anyways, of course, as a representative as Foresight, but definitely also someone who knows his shit, man. So I appreciate you hopping on and educating me just as much as anyone listening.
Thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate the time, and happy to be on again. We can talk golf clubs or all sorts of fun stuff, I'm sure.
All right, I know you got a heart out. Real quick, what's in your bag right now? Give me the clubs.
All right, this is going to seem horrible, but I got an M4 driver in there still.
Old trusty? Yeah.
Oh, I just pound it.
Just can't get rid of it. All right.
Yeah, I've got TSI 3 and 5 wood. I switch the 5 wood out every once in a while for the utility iron stretch on. Got a 1-of-1 set. I'm not going to get into too much about what they are because I don't want to get them stolen.
Oh,
but yeah,
no.
I've got a set of 1-on-1. I will say this. It's the only set I've ever seen with 3 millimeters of onset.
Wow.
Yeah, it's anti-left.
Anti-left. Not hooking that shit.
Never. And then wedges. Got some Cleveland wedges in there, the Zip 4s. And I put in the Phil Mickelson grind wedge a few years back because I just was struggling out of the sand. Those high toe wedges, especially with certain geometry on those sole grinds, it's like cheating out of bunkers. It's like so stupid out of bunkers. So
yeah,
I have one of those Phil Mickelson grind Callaways. I can't remember which one it is. And then the putter, I've got a little slant neck Ardmore, which is kind of that fang tooth putter. It's been in the bag a while, actually, probably the longest of all of them. So, that's the set right now.
That must mean you're a pretty good putter then, Tim, if you got the same putter you've had for a while.
My stats, my strokes gained, says I'm like plus 1.5 shots around, so I'll take that.
I think that's pretty good on the greens, man. So, well, cool. Yeah. And just to, you just kind of put my brain in a blender again with the wedge, because I play Zip cores and I've got the 60 degree right now with a Tiger grind. I had my buddy, really good grinder, and they just came out with the full face, and I'm like, but I really wanted the bunkers. I want to be that much better out of the bunkers because I'm always in them.
I would tell you, give any of those high toes a shot, especially the Phil Mickelson grind or the actual high toe from TaylorMade. Wilson's got one as well. They're magic out of bunkers. It's unbelievable.
We'll see then. I'll give it a test. So, all right, Tim, man, enjoy
your day.
Yep. Thanks so much for hopping on the pod. I appreciate you, bud.
Have a good one.
Again, that's Tim Breon is his name. You might be familiar with him, seen him around YouTube, seen him on a podcast, heard him on a podcast before, but now he's at Foresight Sports, and definitely a good guy to know in this industry, and I'm very thankful for his time, and I'm thankful for you for listening to The Breon Golf Show. It's presented by Pinned Golf. Get that ace. Try it out. PinnedGolf.com. Use the promo code BreonGolf to save big.